Our chalice lighting this morning is adapted from the Reverend Bruce Southworth. For the gift of this day and for our wide open community that binds us to our values and what holds us close through our lives, we give thanks. We light this chalice as a symbol of our faith. May our many sparks meet and merge in wonder and in care. Let us say our affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
Good morning. My name is Kim Transier. Our opening reading is excerpted from the Reverend Lynn Harrison, committed to respond to the call of a wounded world. We join together this day with loving hearts, hands, and minds, embracing the interconnected web of water, air, and earth. We light a fire of sustaining hope, ever bright with love and justice. May we bring forth this day new wisdom, strength, and courage to create a new world, not of wealth, but well-being. A world of new peace and abundance for all. As we give thanks for this earth, our shared and singular home, may we dedicate ourselves to its ongoing care, rising to the calls deep within us, all around us. May we respond today and always with courage and with love.
Good morning, friends. It is so good to be with you today. Today, I'm going to tell you a story called The Little Red Stroller. And as I'm telling you this story, I want you to think about the way that this congregation, this beloved community of West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, helps you share your gifts with others. And I encourage you, as you listen to this story and you look at the pictures that embody a connected community, that we all think about the gifts that we have to share and how they will keep us going like the little red stroller for generations to come. This is The Little Red Stroller by Joshua First, illustrated by Katie Wu. A long time ago, when Luna was just 2 weeks old, her mommy gave her a little red stroller. For now, it lived in the hallway. But as Luna got bigger, she used it to get to school and to the playground. And on weekends, Luna and her mommy and the little red stroller wandered up and down the avenue, from the bagel place to the flower shop to the pizzeria where Luna liked to get her favorite olive pizza. One day, Luna bumped into her downstairs neighbor, Ernie, and his mommy and daddy. "We wish we had a little red stroller just like yours," they told Luna. "I'm too big for my stroller now. Why don't you take it?" Luna said. So they did. And on sunny days, Ernie and his mommy and daddy and the little red stroller roamed around the park, from the Japanese garden to the mini train that went through tunnels to the carousel where Ernie got to ride the lion. One day, Ernie and his mommy and daddy had lunch with Gigi. Gigi and her daddy were going on a visit to visit Gigi's grandpa. "We wish we had a stroller to take with us," Gigi's daddy said. "We got this little red stroller from Luna, but I'm too big for it now. Why don't you take it?" said Ernie. So they did. And Gigi and her daddy in the little red stroller meandered all over the cute little town where Gigi's grandpa lived, from the river to the farmer's market to her grandpa's house, where he cooked a yummy meal in a special pot called a pressure cooker. One long day after they got home, Gigi and her daddy met Callie at the playground. Callie and her two mommies were going to a birthday party. "We wish we had a stroller like yours," one of Callie's mommies said. "We got this little red stroller from Ernie, but I'm too big for it now," said Gigi. "Why don't you take it?" So they did. And Callie and her mommies in the little red stroller rolled all the way to the birthday party, where they saw a magic show and ate ice cream cake and dressed up as pirates to go on a treasure hunt. Callie found a doubloon. One day, after she'd been to many more birthday parties, Callie and her mommies had dinner with Taj. Taj and his mommy and daddy were going to the countryside to visit a farm. "We wish we had a stroller to take with us," Taj's mommy and daddy said. "We got this little red stroller from Gigi," Callie said, "but I'm too big for it now. Why don't you take it?" And so they did. And Taj and his mommy and daddy in the little red stroller rambled all around the farm, from the field where they chased chickens, to the barn where they fed alpacas, to the stand where Taj got to drink some really yummy apple cider. One day, Taj and his mommy and daddy met Kavi. Kavi and his mommy and daddy were going to the beach. Like Callie and Gigi and Ernie and Taj, and even Luna, who was getting to be a pretty big girl now, Kavi needed a stroller. And like Callie and Gigi and Ernie and Luna and their mommies and daddies and mommies and mommies and daddy and mommy, Taj and his mommy and daddy gave the little red stroller to Kavi, who clacked along the boardwalk with it before giving it to Sula and her two daddies, who marched in a Halloween parade with it, and then gave it to Caroline and her mommy and daddy, who took it camping in the mountains, before giving it to Maxine and her mommy and daddy, who went all the way to Texas and back with it, before they gave it to Selah and his mommy and daddy. After traveling up and down the avenue and around the park and all over the cute little town by the river and to about 100 birthday parties, to say nothing of marching in a Halloween parade and camping in the mountains and going all the way to Texas and back and to a farm and the beach, the little red stroller was so tattered and tired, it could go no further. One day, when they were out with the little red stroller, Selah and his mommy and daddy sat on the steps of a museum feeling sad. When Ben and his mommy saw them crying, Ben asked, "What's wrong?" "Our little red stroller has broken," said Selah's mommy and daddy. Ben and his mommy thought about this, and then they had an idea. "We have a little yellow stroller," Ben said. "I'm too big for it now. Why don't you take it?" So they did. And since it was summer and there was a free music festival happening in the park, Selah and his mommy and daddy and the little yellow stroller wandered over to eat corn on the cob and cheesy arepas and sang along with songs they knew by heart. One day, Selah and his mommy and daddy met Luna, who was grown up by then and had a baby of her own. His name was Isaiah, and he was just 2 weeks old. When Selah saw that Isaiah didn't have a stroller, he said, "We got this little yellow stroller from Ben, but I'm too big for it now. Why don't you take it?" And so Luna's baby, Isaiah, did.
Our words this morning for the prayer, meditation, or reflection is Gratitude by Gary Snyder, and it's based on the Iroquois Thanksgiving Address, which they have gifted to all people. Gratitude to Mother Earth, sailing through the night and day and to her soil, rich, rare, and sweet. In our minds, so be it. Gratitude to plants, the sun-facing, light-changing leaf and fine root hairs, standing still through wind and rain. Their dance is the flowing spiral of grain. In our minds, so be it. Gratitude to air, bearing the soaring, swift, and silent owl at dawn, breath of our song, clear spirit breeze. In our minds, so be it. Gratitude to wild beings, our brothers and sisters teaching secrets, freedoms, and ways self-complete, brave and aware. In our minds, so be it. Gratitude to water, clouds, lake, rivers, glaciers, holding or releasing, streaming through our bodies, salty seas. In our minds, so be it. Gratitude to the sun, blinding, pulsing light, through trunks of trees, through mists, warming caves where bears and snakes sleep. He who wakes us. In our minds, so be it. Gratitude to the great sky who holds billions of stars and goes beyond that, beyond all powers and thoughts, and yet is within us. Grandfather's space. The mind is his wife. So be it. And now we will have time for prayer or meditation or reflection, as is your tradition.
What We Need by the Reverend Victoria Safford. Our desires and our decisions may be boundless, but our needs, if we're honest, are really pretty basic. We need shelter and food and clothing. And beyond this, we need friendship. We need comrades in the struggle. We need art. We need a way to hear music often. We need noble work, paid or unpaid, in the home or out of it. We need, each of us, a calling. We need trees and grass and water fairly close by. We need religious grounding. Some of us need a mature and sustaining experience of God. Some need prayer. Some need glimpses of the transcendent, a sense of something larger than themselves. Some of us need ethical clarity. We need solitude. We need community. We find the sources of these things we need, and then we choose to sustain them, to nurture them, not by willpower, not by some sense of duty or obligation, but because we care passionately about them and find them central to our lives.
Walls are the bolts and tribes. These blessed lands are welcoming hands. Make
Why woof? Our stewardship committee asks us, why woof? Long before I was born, a group of families started woof. They wanted community and religious education, and they wanted to think about what mattered without the Christian point of view that was so prevalent in those days. They wanted to be free thinkers. They wanted interesting and supportive friends. They wanted to serve the community around them. Our ancestors worked hard to make woof happen. There was no staff, but there was a lot of very smart, capable women who raised kids and considered woof part of that job. Both the women and their spouses threw themselves into making this community vibrant and alive. It was small, but it was mighty. Along the way, they bought this property and the old Methodist church where it sat behind the current Trader Joe's. They planned to move the building to our current property. The morning the moving trucks arrived, the movers told them they would have to remove two very large pines to make the move possible. No one there had ever done such a thing, but Joanne Nordling's husband, George, had seen it done, and after looking it over, declared that he could do it. He got his chainsaw and felled those trees perfectly. Those woofers had a can-do attitude, and they made woof happen. Because of them, we have this warm religious home today. We have a place to seek meaning and find comfort and courage, surrounded by people who know us. Why woof? I ask myself this question often as we come upon the second anniversary of the COVID pandemic. As we are facing 2 years of pandemic that just will not end, I must admit I feel tired. I just want to hug everyone. And I feel the flatness of watching services instead of being in them. I feel the way that Zoom gatherings, every single time we meet, leaves us missing the fullness of each other. Why woof, I ask myself. What are we doing? When we can't feel community in the same way we once did, does it matter? This place, our mission? Our world floats in liminal space between one way of being and another way of being. It is often uncomfortable space. Since what in the world is what we are saying all the time? And most of us would just like life to flow along in a more predictable and positive manner. For a long time, most of us thought we would go back to the way we were before. But I don't think most of us think that anymore. The ease of gathering has been lost. And for some of us, it will be lost for a long time, or maybe forever. Fear of the possibility of sickness and death freezes some of us, even as the possibility of death from the virus recedes for the fully vaccinated. Even as we open, hopefully again in a few weeks, not everyone will feel comfortable and will want safer circumstances, which is perfectly natural and normal after what we've been through. And still others will have lost the habit of gathering and continue to enjoy the ease of services from home. But what is a congregation if it's not a place to gather? So why woof? In this morning's reading, UU Minister Victoria Safford listed the most basic of human needs: shelter, food, and clothing. And after that, friendship, music, trees, and water. But also, she says, we need religious grounding. This can mean so many things, she says, from glimpses of the transcendence to ethical clarity. Congregations provide religious grounding. We offer so much that other communities do not. Yes, there are friends and potential friends, and if we've been around a while, people who have known us for a very long time. But also, we comfort those who are suffering, and we celebrate with those who are joyful. We supply guidance on how to live a rich and meaningful and/or spiritual life. We remember the world is beautiful and wondrous, and we remind ourselves to be grateful always. We also recognize the brokenness of the world, of ourselves and each other, and allow ourselves to feel the pull to heal and repair. We hold up visions of the world as we want it to be and try to live into that world in our personal lives and in our communities. In the New Testament, the vision of what is possible is called the Kingdom of God. Unitarian Universalists don't use that language anymore, but we have kept from our Christian roots the idea that the world can be a more loving, caring, and inclusive place than it so often is. We come into religious community because we want to live as loving, caring, and inclusive people. We also want peace and wonder and the joy of life. We come into religious community because we want to build a loving, caring, inclusive world that includes all of life. We want for everyone peace and the wonder and the joy of life. Why Woof? We are living in a liminal space between one way of being a society and another. It is a complex, strange time with myriads of questions about relationships, work, the economy, race and oppression, democracy, and really what matters about being alive. This is a time when most of us need more religious grounding than ever. And I know some of you don't think of our faith as a religion or a place that offers something called religious grounding. Maybe it even makes you feel itchy, those words. And perhaps you define religion as a tradition with a strict set of beliefs and creeds and practices that narrow people's freedom. I don't believe this is really true, even though in common conversations, I admit, it can seem like that sometimes. The word religion actually comes from the Latin religios, and it means to bind fast. It came to be used over time to describe monks who were bound fast to particular practices and God. However, in its expansive version, it means practices and beliefs that bind us fast to what matters most and what holds us fast when we do not know what to do. Religions do not agree on what matters and what holds us. Because Unitarian Universalist disagrees with more prominent, more widely known faiths does not mean that we too are not bound fast. Our faith asks us to bind to what matters, and we state those in our principles. The inherent worth and dignity of every person. Treating people fairly. Acceptance and encouragement of spiritual growth. A free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Democracy. Peace, liberty, and justice for all, and the care for the interdependent web of all existence. These are strong and powerful values to guide us. We are also bound to which holds us and provides a container for our lives to make meaning and these are represented in our sources. The direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder, affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces that create and uphold life. Words and deeds of prophetic people, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. Wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. Humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against the adulteries of the mind and spirit. Spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. Our sources provide strong spiritual and ethical grounding. They point us toward what is greater than ourselves and what can ground us and inspire us when we don't know where to turn. Of course, we are not only bound by our principles and sources, we are bound by our relationships with one another through covenant that says we will walk together in love. We are bound by the practices of faith. Sunday morning worship, which reminds us week in and week out of what is most worthy. Small groups for increased connection. Personal practices, which help us to live in the present with compassion and service that heals the interconnected web and our hearts. I know. The idea of being bound can feel itchy and claustrophobic to many free thinking you use. But this kind of binding is not the being trapped and caught sort, but the being connected and held sort. The being together in a web of meaning and support and kindness and love and agreeing to be in that web together. Religious grounding is the strength we get when we are connected to what matters most in our life. It holds us in a culture that constantly distracts us with messages about our imperfection and endless desires that we need to fill, stories of chaos and pain, products and experiences that are supposed to fill us up, and so many opportunities to zone and check out. Religious grounding supports us when we are afraid, uncomfortable, or unable to make sense of the world. So why woof? Because we need religious grounding. All people need grounding in what matters most to them and sources of strength and comfort. In our topsy-turvy world, we need that more than ever. It's not just us that needs that. Our neighbors need it too. I believe our faith is life-giving and helpful, especially now, when the social networks so many people have depended on have disappeared. I believe it is helpful when people are seeking to make sense of the cultural conversations about race and oppression and who America really is. It is helpful when people need to sort out the goals of consumerism and monetary success from what really makes for a satisfying life. It is helpful when people just need to be seen and heard by others for who they are and find ways to heal, care, and serve. I have always believed that our faith, grounded as it is in values, and a free search for truth and meaning is the easiest step into a religious life for those who are secular or spiritual without community. We don't ask people to use metaphors or stories about the holy that make no sense to them. We do not insist that there is only one answer to that question. Instead, we ask people to find what matters and holds them within the values and sources of our faith. We tell a truth that is profound and life-giving. We exist in social and natural interconnected webs. These webs support us, and we care for them. It is the work of our lives. And in our congregation, we offer covenanted community to learn the skills of living an interconnected life well and with love. Why woof? A longtime consultant to liberal religious communities, Dan Hotchkiss, writes in his book, Governance and Ministry, "Thriving congregations understand that they have something vitally important to share with others. Liberal congregations' problem is not liberal theology. It is their doubt that other people need and want a liberal faith." Why woof? Because we have a faith that is vitally important to the world right now. We have a community that is bubbling with energy, even under COVID. People are active in small groups that sustain them. Lots of people watch our services and are nourished by them. People are asking questions about how to live hopefully and faithfully in a world where there is so much pain and also so much joy. We are helping immigrants and hungry people. We matter. This Sunday is the kickoff of the stewardship campaign. Each of you is asked to make a pledge stating the amount of money you agree to give WOOF this coming year so that we can make budgets and plan. I have been to stewardship sermons where congregants are asked to think about how much the church matters in their lives and give accordingly. This is a good and reasonable way to think about it. But this month, our theme is widening the circle. And this morning, I ask you to give generously to WOOF because WOOF matters beyond yourself, to the wider circle. I ask you to give for the people, for all the people in our community who depend upon us because it gives them inspiration, compassionate community, and ways to serve the world. I ask you to give for all the people in our larger community, in Southwest Portland and the larger Portland area, who also need religious grounding and need us to be here when they are ready to find us. I ask for the immigrants and dreamers and hungry families we serve. I ask for everyone, anywhere, who benefits from congregations of people firmly living positive values in our lives and the public square. I ask for everyone who benefits from our quest to love well. Why WOOF? Long ago, our founders made WOOF happen. They inspired each other. They cared for each other. They served the community around them. They created WOOF and maintained it for themselves and each other and for us. They handed down this faith like the red stroller was handed down. They made WOOF happen. We can hand down this faith to future generations as well. Why WOOF? because our message is life-giving, because we matter. Can I get a hallelujah? Can I get an amen?
Affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
Our benediction is from Rumi. The ground's generosity takes in our compost and grows beauty. Try to be more like the ground. I extinguish this flame, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they stay with you until we meet again.